Il avait installé chez moi deux tolanas. J'ai pu commencer à travailler chez moi. De temps en temps, je me ferais des petites choses. J'avais découvert les systèmes de feedback en gardant la juste limite entre un haut-parleur et un micro. On pouvait très légèrement faire évoluer le son. J'appelais ça proposition sonore, que je n'avais pas du tout envie de discuter avec qui que ce soit pour savoir si c'était de la musique ou pas.
Greenwich Village is mostly a state of mind.
The village in the 50s had to be the most exciting, wonderful place in the world. It was unbelievable, like Paris in the 20s. We were married in 48, and Louis' cousin brought us a tape recorder for a wedding present. I think we were the only ones in the country with that machine. We had all the artists in the village coming to us for recording work.
I remember my first birth in water. I sway and float, stand on boneless toes, listening for distant sounds, sounds beyond the reach of human ears.
We started a recording studio. We built almost all the equipment ourselves because there wasn't any to buy.
The great American boy is hard at work, inventing, creating, building something. And the desire to build and create new things is the energy that develops industrious, dependable citizens of tomorrow.
It was exciting because you were building these things and you're experimenting with the electronic medium.
Louis made sounds by overloading circuit boards, which Bibi then processed and manipulated to create music. To the writer Anais Nin, it sounded like a molecule had stubbed its toe.
And we started working on avant-garde films. That's what this was all about, was the avant-garde. The sense of wonder and awe. The beauty coming from the circuits. I mean, we would just sit back and let them take over.
These circuits are not instruments. They are performers.
We would record everything that came out of the circuits. I spent hours and hours and hours listening to all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, later, you went through miles of tape.
Yeah.
Incredible. And she could hold it in her memory.
But
she could remember where to go for a certain feeling in the sound.
Bibi had a formal musical education. She made most of the compositional decisions, while Louis dealt more with the technical side of things. The Baron's greatest achievement was with the music for Forbidden Planet. It was the first movie with an all-electronic score.
The pride and joy of that period was in coming up with the music for the monster. We were just beside ourselves. Suddenly, this circuit started generating the most complex sounds. The dying of Morbius was the actual dying of the circuit.
Have a credit that said electronic music by Louis and B.B. Baron. But a memo was circulated among the executives. How would the American Federation of Musicians respond to a credit that says electronic music?
The musicians union would not allow the soundtrack to be considered music. They were afraid that someday their jobs would be replaced by machines, and so they would have none of it. That's why it's credited as electronic tonalities.
It was so awful. We were barely acknowledged as composers.
To Doctor Who, there's a lot of distaste of electronic music. Devia's music is absolutely crucial in changing that perception.
It's like a lighthouse, isn't it? Wonder what it's like up there in a thunderstorm. Think of being up there on a starry night with all the world at your feet.
You get people who are writing in saying, what is this? How is it made?
Imagine what life must have been like before samplers, before synthesizers, before sequencers. It took her 40 days to make the Doctor Who theme. 40 days.
She would sample the green lamp shade, speed it up, reverse it, and just completely change the nature of the sound.
This was a documentary program about the Tuareg tribe. The Tuareg tribe are nomads in the Sahara Desert. In the piece, I tried to convey the distance of the horizon and the heat haze, the strand of camels wandering across the desert. That, in fact, was made from square waves put through every filter I could possibly find.
There must be a God. Oh, yes.
Delia Derbyshire created some very, very beautiful things, and some things that had a kind of very strange and unearthly quality that couldn't quite be got, I think, by normal musical means, and yet didn't sound as if they were electronically manufactured.
Some of it was worked out mathematically. I've tried to get into it a feeling of simplicity and loneliness of a man on a moon.
Pathway for electronic music.
I did all sorts of things I was told I couldn't do. I think I've always been a very independent thinker.
The work of women like Delia and Daphne came from the deafening sounds of wartime. It was the chilling silence of the Cold War that took others to the limits of listening.
The bomb scare psychology that was inculcated, that had a big effect on the artists that were emerging at that time. Everybody was pushing for opening things up, a kind of way through all the terrible stuff that was going on in the world at the time. So there was a lot of political motivation behind what we were doing. The effect was to say, okay, we've got to break through anything that was rigid, anything that was limiting, and try to move things forward.
Music scene was evolving into an area that was very fresh and exciting. The first time I heard live electronic music was early 60s. Pauline was on stage with an accordion. The room was exploding with sound of his ear splitting. I had never experienced that kind of volume before.
Interested in sound. I remember particularly things like riding in the car with my parents, for instance, maybe in the back seat, listening to the sound of the motor and listening to the sound of my parents' voices being modulated by the motor. Listening to my father tune his shortwave radio, listening to the whistles and pops and static. I mean, I was always fascinated with the in-between sounds in the stations, just tuning in between. I love that. I credit my mother. For my birthday, she sent me a tape recorder, and that was a very significant event because nobody had tape recorders, you know. Oh. It was in the 50s.
I began to record, do field recording from my apartment window. And then in 1959, got started making a tape piece called Time Perspectives. Tape recorder that I had, it was possible to record by hand winding the tape in record mode, so that gave me a variable speed, so I could do some interesting things with that. And I used the bathtub for reverberation and cardboard tubes as filters. I'd put microphones in a tube and then record sounds through the tube. eventually I met up with a group of people who were interested in new music, which led to the founding of the San Francisco Tape Music Center.
The San Francisco Tape Music Center was not associated with an institution. So it was friends brought together what equipment they had to share.
Our sense of what we were doing at that point was opening a place where poets, painters, film, and electronic or tape music, where all this stuff could be done. It was a sense of individuality. Nobody wanted to be like anyone else. And everybody was very supportive of what everybody else was doing.
My interest was always in live performance, and I started to find out ways to use tape recorders and perform live with them. And that was making a tape delay system, which allows me to maintain that physical contact with the sound.
Exercise the canon of classical music of misogyny with two oscillators, a turntable, and tape delay.
Feminism was at the center of what she was doing. And it's strange because it seems like if the boys' club is going to pick a token woman, you would not pick a woman who is that outspoken.
Pauline was conscious of the fact that she was different. She had a streak of a revolutionary in her.
Pauline, it was hard. You know, she'd come out in the 50s, and here she was, a woman, gay, avant-garde music. Each thing by itself would be hard, but she had three things that were hard, and women composers were not being performed, you know.
You wrote an editorial to the New York Times once called Don't Call Them Lady Composers. Tell
That's
us about
right.
When you wrote that and why.
I just wanted to be introduced as a composer. That caused me to use that title and to start to point out how hard it was for women to be taken seriously as creators of music.
Walking at night. Tread so quietly the bottoms of your feet become ears. Working with an all-women ensemble, instructions like these were intended to encourage deep listening.
Alarmed, as many were, of course, with the Vietnam War, and I began to seek some ways of working with sound that I could discover more a kind of inner peace. I found myself listening to long sound and becoming more interested in what the sounds did themselves than what I would do with them. And as this work proceeded, I began to become interested in what the kind of listening I was doing did to me and my own internal processes.
Does it have social and political implications to you, the kind of music that you write?
Oh, yes. Well, I feel that one's interactions, the way one relates in an organization of any kind, is political and social and very important. The path that I hope to be on is one where the energy that comes out of the work that I do is beneficial to others as well as myself. I want my work to be mutually beneficial. I'm not interested in making an object of art and entertainment. I'm interested in making something that helps me to grow and expand and change as an individual and in relation to others.
Pauline's preoccupation with how we hear and feel the sounds within and around us were shared by Marianne Amershay at MIT, who is sounding out the city.
I had installed a microphone in 8 locations at the Boston Harbor in the New England Fish Exchange, connected to telephone links. And it was very nice to come in late at night at 1 o'clock in the morning and just turn on the mixer and have the sound coming from the distant night when I liked it best, because I could hear patterns and various shapes. I realized, there's a tone of this place. There's a whole undercurrent that exists here that makes this recognizable in some way. Well, it wasn't hard to analyze it. In Boston, it was like a low F sharp. In other places, for example, New York, it was like a low E. It wasn't that I wanted the sounds of birds or the sounds of the harbor or any of these sounds. I really wanted to experience and learn about hearing.
When people say to you, yeah, but is it music? After you say, yes, it is, how do you expand on that?
Well, I think that's sort of an old question. Much of our music, classical pop, has this beat, has this gallop, has this trot. I'm interested in music that communicates some ideas. Finding places where there is space and dimension to the sound. Sounds very, very far away and very close up.
Marianne was really interested in contemporary science. She had been very interested in muon research, these particles that speed through the universe.
She was constantly thinking about intersections of science, life, and sound.
Her house was incredible. It was in breathtakingly bad condition. There was this whole rack full of these sine wave oscillators, straight out of a physics lab. And there's this woman sitting there with this really intense, like, buzzy energy.
She had a rock and roll attitude towards, I'm going to make this whole house vibrate and come alive.
wanted to develop an extremely rigorous approach to listening, to activating sights, to thinking outside of composition as it's known. She didn't want to push around dead white men's notes.
I wanted to create a music where the listener actually had vivid experiences of contributing.
In composing, I am conscious of the tones that you make in response to the tones that a musician plays.
One of the phenomena she was most interested in was autoacoustic emission. She referred to them as ear tones. If you have two frequencies and they sound together, the ear and the mind try to sort of resolve them. There is an emergent third pitch. She can compose these outer things that will produce this inner thing. She would refer to it as ghostwriting the listener's music.
The first time one encounters her music and the way that it dances inside your ear is this light bulb moment. You can actually play with the physicality of the listener.
Merce Cunningham commissioned a piece from her. You'd hear this very high pitch, and then there'd be thunder. Beautiful thunder recorded in stereoscopic sound that would shift across the room. And when it hit, there'd be this array of other frequencies that would happen. It was very, very beautiful.
Of a slowly evolving composition that alters the listener also fired the imagination of Eliane Radig.
Ce n'est qu'en allant aux États-Unis que j'ai eu pour la première fois accès à un synthétiseur. Tout l'univers musical était extrêmement vivant. C'était une époque d'une effervescence incroyable. Ça a été une ouverture de tous les côtés.
When I met Eliane, she had been working with the Buchla synthesizer, yet this piece that she wrote, Creeptus, sounded nothing like a Buchla.
J'ai travaillé avec le Buchla et un jour, dans une exposition, j'ai vu le ARP. C'était le coup de foudre. La qualité du son est tout à fait spéciale. Il a une couleur qui est la sienne, il a une voix. J'ai vécu une histoire d'amour avec mon ARP 2500.
We're talking with Eliane Radig, who's here from Paris.
Are you working with both synthesizers and tape recording processors?
Yes, the ARP synthesizer and three tapes recorder. My main involvement with music is to work on slow changing of the sounds.
So in a way, you're working with time.
Yes. My last work, Adnos 2, is 75 minutes long. And it couldn't be shorter. It just goes like a stream. I should say that the music I make is not so much welcome, except by a few people, of course. There is nothing in between. People likes it or not at all. For the music establishment, they think that I don't make music. That's not music.
Still arguing about that, are we?
Our music was meant to be listened to in a different way than how you listen to, like, a pop song. In a pop song, you're listening for melodies, harmonies, lyrics. In her music, you're listening not just for the things that are changing in the sound, but for the way that the experience is changing your disposition.
Après cette promenade dans les nuages, revenons sur Terre et nous sommes 3e avenue au coin de la 43e rue. Nous sommes venus ici pour nous rendre chez Sam Goody.
Et parmi les disques récents qui figurent au Cashbox dans les 10 premiers, se trouve un nouvel enregistrement de Bach réalisé en musique électronique. On en vend actuellement environ 9000 par jour, c'est-à-dire à peu près autant que les Beatles. Je pense que les admirateurs de Bach vont crier à la profanation, mais avant de condamner, il est tout de même plus équitable d'écouter les tonalités assez surprenantes que l'on obtient avec la musique électronique. C'est dans son petit studio du West Side que Carlos a installé son synthétiseur électronique qui extérieurement ressemble plutôt à un standard téléphonique qu'à un instrument de quelconque. Jusqu'ici, la musique électronique produisait des sons bizarres.
I'll make it start very dull and then get very bright like that. It sounds more like a trumpet sound.
Carlos a démontré que l'on pouvait reconstituer de la musique classique en partant de la musique électronique.
And I'll add a little echo.
The transgressive act of recontextualizing these classic Western art music tropes, that takes a lot of strength, humor, and vision.
Up until that moment, the electronic music had this promise of a different vocabulary, a different language, a new paradigm, a new way of working. Switched on Bach, the way it impacted the public's consciousness of what a synthesizer was completely retroactive. Everybody thought that these things were about replicating sounds. To me, electronic music wasn't about making Baroque music with new timbres. It was a different kind of music. You just had the summer of love. Everything we knew was being thrown out. And it was a whole new world. Electronics were part of that world.
What are they?
Oh, these are patch cords. These are the things that route the signal from one little module to another to get the sound. You can patch it in a lot of different ways. And the way you patch it will determine what you get. It's like creating an instrument.
Do you know before you put them in what it's going to sound like?
Well, you're always going towards an idea. You know, that's what makes you put the patch cords in certain places. You know, part of an instrument is what it can do, and part of it is what you do to it. The other part of music, of course, is the motion and the personal involvement that a musician gives to his instrument. And that's something that I happen to feel and have with synthesizers. So I play the synthesizer the same way somebody else would play cello or violin.
For a classically trained pianist to turn a back on a keyboard is crazy. It was like learning a new language via the means of cutting out your own tongue.
Yeah, I can sing out of tune and it'll still be in tune because it depends on what I'm playing. This is all the pitch, so you don't have to really be able to sing to do this. So it's great, you know. Hello.
I couldn't get a record deal because the record companies were not interested in a woman who did not sing. Advertising wanted to be on the edge. They were looking for something different. I had total freedom. Nobody could tell me what to do. They didn't know what I did.
The new Clairol Custom Care Curling Brush.
Atari is going to turn your head around.
Big news from CoverGirl.
There's a whole new Thick Lash Mascara.
The landscape that she must have walked into must have been like something from Mad Men. I remember Suzanne telling me stories like she'd turn up early to set up all the modular gear in studios, and the young engineer would come in and go, which mic are you going to sing on? Or what are you going to sing for us? Because those stereotypes were so commonplace in studios in those days.
Welcome to Xenon. Welcome.
More than anybody else, she built a career out of making weird music, which is something I think everybody aspires to. She had her own company. She was able to turn her art into something she can live on.
Oh.
Don't be afraid. This is my almost male voice.
Make some, make the thing make noises for
okay,
us. Now, first of all, why do you have this stuff? What do you do with this?
Well, this is how I make a living.
But, I mean, you don't go door to door saying, I'll make you sound goofy.
They call me.
They call you.
It was 1980. I was hired to do a Hollywood feature. It was a Lily Tomlin movie. Lily was a woman. The head of the production at Universal was a woman. So I had two women in positions of power, and guess what? I got hired.
Is that package for me, Dan?
Mike, it's for me.
I didn't know I was the first woman to be hired to score a major Hollywood feature. And I didn't know that it would be 14 years until another woman was hired. We are casualties of a day-to-day system that operates without awareness that we're even there.
Galaxy Blue, the light would go to pieces without Galaxy Blue.
There weren't any women composers that I knew of. I had never heard of one. Composers were old white dead men. It was just not something I ever thought of as something I could do. When they asked me in high school, what would you like to do with your life? I said, I would love to do music. They said, totally out of the question. You would have needed to have music lessons all during your childhood. So I did a degree in the social sciences, but secretly I really always wanted to do music. After I got my bachelor's and moved to New York, I thought, I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life if I don't give it a real try. I was taking ear training and music at Juilliard and happened to be in Mike Tchaikovsky's class, and he was working with Mort Subotnick. Mike dragged me down to Mort's studio, and it was like music went from black and white to color. I fell in love with electronic music. It completely changed the way I heard everything. The sounds of the traffic in the street no longer sounded the same. I always wanted to do something in the arts that had to do with the real authentic experience of being alive, in contrast to the 1950s hypocritical reality in which I lived, and in which everything was glossed over with cotton candy.
A perfect dinner, Judy. And you said she couldn't boil water without burning
it. I got involved in the downtown art scene, which is like, try anything, you know. Learning the Buchla modular analog system. While I could do all kinds of wonderful things with sounds, what I really wanted was the precision of the computer.
I got involved with computers and music out of frustration and other ways of doing music, in part, and also because of the incredible potential that they had for combining the best of all other worlds, let's say, the memory, the logic, the ability to actually interact with sound in real time began to be possible. The complete freedom to define any kind of world you wanted.
Then were the enemy of the counterculture. Computers belonged to the banks and the military and the insurance companies. Computer music was the utter dehumanization of music rather than, to some few of us, the liberation of it.
You mean to tell me that you haven't heard it?
No, I haven't heard it. Here, play it. It's really terrific, Susie. When you hear it.
Excuse me, ladies. I have a special request.
Spiegel was a ukulele player, among other things. She had a sense of music that is based in folk idioms, and Appalachian Grove is one of the earliest computer music pieces that anyone would want to listen to more than once. But to think that it was all done by punching holes in cards and running him through the Bell Labs computer is quite astonishing.
Technology is just, it's a natural extension of man. Man has always played with tools. Man has always developed tools, and it is a tool. It's not, the machine doesn't write the music. You tell the machine what to do, and the machine is an extension of you.
Bell Labs was a great, great institution. Everything changed after the AT&T divestiture happened. Bell Labs became product-oriented instead of pure research. After I left there, I was absolutely desolate. I had lost my main creative medium.
Laurie Spiegel, you have a very fascinating new product, a software program which you created.
Yeah.
Called Music Mouse.
Yes. David,
can you tell us a little bit about that?
This is actually a program which turns the Macintosh into an instrument which you play.
Mm-hmm.
And unlike traditional instruments, on the other hand, it uses the logic of the computer supportively to musical expression.
I needed an instrument. I wanted something which was entirely under my own control, that didn't have to be marketable or didn't involve funding. It was just something entirely mine.
It's the first time I've done something essentially for myself that I'm just really making available to anybody who wants it, and I hope a lot of people really get a lot of good music out of it. Everybody who's using it seems to be doing something slightly different, so I'll be interested, you know, keeping my ears open for whatever you do, mouse ears.
She wasn't satisfied with the given constraints of what she was working with, so she decided to make her own software. She just embodies this idea of agency.
Her work was very much in a lineage with the work of Daphne Oram because of her, you know, engineering of a new language for producing sounds and the support system for other people to invent new soundscapes.
What's the most exciting thing about the field for you?
Well, this is a time at which many people feel that there sort of are a lot of dead ends in music, that there isn't a lot more to do. This is actually, I see this, and through the technology I experience this as quite the opposite. This is a period in which we realize we've only just begun to scratch the surface of what's possible musically.
Through technology, voices are amplified. Silence is broken. Spaces are shared. The music in our head can finally be heard by others.
Trying to make a bit of a revolution, but I don't think we would have put it in such grandiose terms. We were trying to put music back in touch with itself.
Thank you.
There were really no role models for female composers when I studied music. Overall, we are incrementally getting more visibility, but it's two steps forward and one step back. And to this day, it kind of irks me that when I turn on my favorite radio station, it's just the male parade.
It is odd that electronic music, it's generally considered a man's field. Women have been so formative in it.
There has to be a complete change of consciousness throughout the musical field, where they could begin to teach music that's written by women, as well as men, as well as of all colors, and it would effect a great change. Listening is the basis of creativity and culture. How you're listening is how you develop a culture, and how a community of people listen is what creates their culture.
Une certaine qualité, une certaine attention d'écoute, une certaine ouverture d'écoute, on passe à côté, on n'entend rien. Ça a été un tel bonheur, la découverte du travail avec les musiciens. D'avoir des musiciens qui acceptent de faire cette musique-là. Il y a 30 ans, ça aurait été à 40 ans, c'était impossible. Je suis ravie quand je sens une appréciation de cette musique. Parce qu'il y avait des jours où vraiment je me disais que j'étais complètement folle. Pour la première fois, j'entends vraiment la musique dont j'ai eu envie.
Quite reassuring to realize that I wasn't the only woman making strange electronic music.
What relates all of these women is this DIY thing. And DIY is interesting because it doesn't mean that you've explicitly, voluntarily chosen to do it yourself. It's that there are certain barriers in place that don't allow you to do anything. If you don't have the visual or the knowledge of there being any people in the area of work that you're interested in that are similar to you, then you don't think that it's possible for you.
There is something psychological that happens when you can see yourself in the people who are being celebrated.
Your eyes were set on stone. Your heart like the sun. I love to see you shine, cause you really blow my mind. Your heart beats like a drum. It hammers when you go. The terms with you and me are love. Set us free. Synthesize me. Hypnotize me.
Thing that ever happened to me.
Do you copy?
This is the sickest, most perverted thing that ever happened to me.
Do you copy? Over.
This is the sickest, most perverted thing that ever happened to me.
Do you copy?
I just want to say one word to you.